In a different vein, from Los Angeles, Andy Daly, you know him from his show Review, which is on the Comedy Channel right now. Big hit. He's joining us from Los Angeles, and he's on the phone with us right now, I believe. Andy, are you there?
I am here. Hello.
How are you? How are you?
I'm very good. I'm excited to be here. I'm available for this interview because my pig wrestling event was canceled today.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. You can't do things like you used to, I guess. But still, in all, it seems like good fun.
Yeah, well, this is what I'm confused about is that people can't wrestle pigs, but monkeys can be made to dress up like cowboys and ride on top of dogs.
Yeah.
No one's complaining about that one.
It's all priorities. I think we have our priorities screwed up.
I'm trying to figure out which animal is more humiliated by that. Is it the dog or the monkey?
Yeah, I have no idea. It looks pretty cute all around to me. Now, you grew up in Mount Kisco, New York. Is that right? Or that's where you're from?
Actually, I was born in Mount Kisco, New York, but I really grew up in New Jersey, over the river.
You did. When did you start growing up? What age was that?
That's a great question. I don't feel I did much growing up before the age of two. You know, before that, it was just kind of...
Oh, you did.
Just marking. Yeah.
That's pretty early. That's precocious.
Yeah. Yeah, that's when I really, really started hitting my stride. And that's when we got out to Jersey.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to ask, if you were from... Because I looked up Mount Kisco, and, you know, it's really kind of an amazing place. It's 11,000 people, but almost every one of them is notable.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, you're on the list there of notable people from Mount Kisco, but there's just Janet Edelman, Shakespearean scholar, Samuel Barber, the composer, Rick Carey, the three-time Olympic gold medal winner, Bennett Cerf, Andrew Daly, actor and comedian, Michael Eisner, former CEO of Walt Disney, Arlene Francis, Caitlyn Jenner.
Really? Well, I have a possible explanation for that, which is that Mount Kisco is the town where the Westchester General County Hospital is. So a lot of these people, including myself, were born there but didn't live there.
Okay. You were born there and then they get you out of town pretty quick, I guess. Huh?
Yeah, and, you know, the town gets to claim credit for all these people that just spent 3 days in the maternity ward. I guess that's fair.
Yeah. Plus, some of these people are probably more Bedford Corners than Mount Kisco, don't you think?
I don't doubt it. Or Sleepy Hollow, even.
Yeah, Sleepy Hollow. And that's not too far from Chappaqua.
And, that's right.
Yeah.
And my family lived in a town called Croton-on-the-Hudson.
Croton-on-the-Hudson.
Close to there. Identifies its proximity to the river right there in the name of the town.
Yeah. And did you flee to New Jersey, or how'd that happen?
I'm not sure what made us go to New Jersey. Yeah. Actually, that piece of family lore has been lost to time.
Yeah, well, you should ask and find out. I'm curious to know. The show is going good. Review is going great.
Yeah, we had our first season and it was very, very well received by critics and by those members of the viewing public who found it. Who continue to find it on various online destinations. You don't just have to watch things on television anymore. You know, shows have lives after their runs. And so there seems to be a lot of excitement for season two, which premieres this Thursday. I know I'm excited.
Yeah. I think most people probably remember you from The Brave Little Toaster to the Rescue.
Right.
More than anything else.
That may be true. No, I don't know. You know, that's one of those jobs. I've actually tried to have that credit removed from my IMDb page. I filled out multiple requests, mostly because I don't remember doing it. I can't confirm that I was involved in that. I might have to track that down. Apparently, I play a character named Murgatroyd. I don't know what that is or anything about it.
Yeah, but Eastbound and Down.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Eastbound and Down was a great show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you played like the antithesis of the lead character.
Yeah, that's right. I play a guy who in the first episode just has all this hero worship for the main character and is completely oblivious to the fact that the main character is interested in my fiancé. And that obliviousness doesn't hold up for long. And so I got to play over the course of the first season this wonderful arc of discovery of my hero is in love with my fiance and is trying to steal her from me, and then that kind of drives my character crazy. And that was great, great fun to play.
Yeah, I bet. Who's the actor, the lead actor in it?
Danny McBride.
Yeah, Danny McBride. I don't forget his name. He's so fantastic. Playing a washed-out ball player who's trying to make a comeback many years too late. Great, great show. And you're sort of like the counterpoint on that, both in the case of the woman and both just kind of emotionally for the show, because he's so over the top, you know.
Yeah, I spend a lot of time being kind of a voice of reason, you know, being the adult in the room as a high school principal who seems to sort of have his act together, which is why it's all the more surprising that my character then ends up unraveling. I think the audience did not expect that.
Yeah, which is fun. Unraveling is fun, isn't it?
Oh, it's so much fun. Yeah. I love to unravel.
Yeah, it sort of breaks out of character for you, because you play these guys oftentimes who are sort of like the ones who get worked around by life or whatever, or try to hold up the rules or whatever and still get worked over. But to get to bust out and really go crazy must be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. I play a lot of squares. I play a lot of guys who look comfortable in a sweater vest. Picking up the newspaper at the end of the driveway, that's kind of my wheelhouse. And then to take a guy like that into the wilderness picking bugs out of his hair because he's lost his mind, it's great fun.
Yeah, that was a great show. And this is like a star turn for you now, Review.
Yeah, Review was a real opportunity for me to be the lead guy in something, which I'd never really had the chance to do before. I'm always sort of playing a supporting role. And so this was a chance to take that sweater vest guy and have him be the focus of everything that happens.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I've overdone it because I'm in every scene, and sometimes it'd be nice to take a break. But
yeah. Has it turned your head around as far as your own capabilities and what you want to do in the future? Is it a breakout role?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's in many ways for me, because I'm also writing the show and I'm producing the show, and so I'm heavily involved in every aspect of it, straight from, you know, putting the writing room together to editing it, and then being in every scene. So it is. It's definitely much harder than I ever thought I would work in show business. This was not my plan. This is not the Entourage fantasy of show business. But, yeah, it has definitely shown me, you know, various things that I did not necessarily know that I could do, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and it's a great idea. Review is actually a guy, Forrest McNeil.
Forrest McNeil, yeah.
And he does reviews of life. These are actually life reviews.
Yeah, exactly. He doesn't review boring things like food, films, or art. He reviews life experiences, and he considers it a very solemn community service that he's doing here. That anybody in the world can write into him and say, what is it like to have road rage? What is it like to get in a bare-knuckle brawl? And he will go out and he will do it. He will immerse himself in the experience, and then he'll rate every experience on a scale of 1 to 5 stars so you know whether to do it or not.
This is the ultimate. We have a little clip here. Do we have that, Aubrey? I think we do. Yes. This is from a thing on stealing. Explain this. Set this up for us.
Well, he's been asked to review what is it like to steal, and I'm not sure what your clip is here, but he starts off with something very small and ends up discovering that he has some aptitude for it, actually.
Yeah. All right. So first he's stealing malted milk balls or something from a store, and he has a lot of problem with it. Emotionally. Then this is the part, the clip we have here is he actually goes on. He says, what if I did something that was more emotional?
Right.
And this is where he actually steals groceries from an old lady. So it sounds like this.
Hey, pardon me. Can I give you a hand with those?
Oh, thank you.
Oh, sure. Oh, good, yeah.
It's so hard to get.
Oh, I know.
Thank
yes.
You.
Well, my pleasure. Sorry. Oh, yeah.
Hey, where'd you go? Oh,
that's very different.
It's
bad. That feels really bad.
But stealing began to look quite different to me when I brought the groceries home and shared them with my wife, Suzanne, and son, Eric.
Cake.
Oh, my God. What does it say? Happy birthday, Lorraine?
Yeah. Well, I guess they just had some extra cakes.
So. Oh, here are you. I love these surprises.
Yes.
A lot of shredded wheat in here, huh?
Yeah.
There it is. Happy birthday, Lorraine, is a giveaway, I guess. That's such a funny
little bit. That's a telltale sign that is a stolen cake.
Yeah. And you did the writing on this as well, is that what you said?
Yes, and yeah. I relate to that directly because as a young man, I used to often go into supermarkets and see the bins of loose candy that you can fill a bag with, and just think to myself, what would be the harm of taking two or three of these? And so it was like a minor little shoplifting threshold. They're not going to miss 3 malted milk balls, and it'll make my shopping experience much more enjoyable to be chewing on these. And then, so that was where we started for us off, saying this is a very minor theft. And then, to have a true experience of stealing, he had to go a bit further and really do something that had some repercussions and that somebody would notice and it was richer, tougher.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of this, you were in the Upright Citizens Brigade, right? Weren't you years ago?
Yeah, when they first came to New York and started teaching classes, the original Upright Citizens Brigade 4 members, I was one of the first people to sign up for their classes.
Yeah. There. Is there a lot of improv on this show as well, or is it not so much?
There is. There definitely is. And not only that, but a lot of what I learned about long-form improvisation from those guys is implemented in the writing of the show, the way that the first scene will tie into the last scene, and there's just kind of threads that dovetail in a given episode. But also, when we're shooting, we do have scripts. This is not one of those shows where we improvise from an outline like a Curb Your Enthusiasm or a Reno 911. We have scripts, but we depart from them very, very liberally, partly just to find new comedy, but also just to put for all the actors to put things into your own words to make it all sound more natural and just to overlap with each other, because it's a mockumentary. It's a cinema verite style, and we really want it to feel that way.
Was it based on an Australian show? Was that what I saw?
Yeah, that's right. There was a show in Australia called Review with Miles Barlow, which was a whole different creative team that did it there for 2 seasons of 6 episodes. And Comedy Central saw that and thought of me to do the American version, and I'm very glad they did.
Yeah, good choice. Reno 911, I'm trying to remember who you played on that. Who did you play on that?
I played a bunch of different guys in the deal. I played a recurring character by the name of Brad the Friendly Homeowner, who literally wore a sweater vest and answered the door. And the first time I was ever on that show, the police were responding to a call. I had called to say that somebody came into my house and took my daughter at gunpoint. Just very dark.
Yeah.
But in the course of the scene, I just kept saying, never mind, I'm sorry I bothered you. I shouldn't have called you out here. No big deal. That was just kind of the character's attitude. I'm wasting your time. I'm sorry. Yes, he did take her at gunpoint, but this is frivolous. I apologize.
See, not many people could play that.
Yeah, the guy's just too sweet to waste the police time with something so minor as his daughter being abducted.
Yeah. Do you ever play, really dark, disturbed characters, or...? Are you working on that?
I'm always working on it. That's what I am in real life. No, I never really played a full-on dramatic, dark, disturbed person. There's always plenty of comedy leavening it.
Yeah. You're not one of those comedians that has a dark side or a dramatic side that's longing to come out.
Oh, I don't know. As an actor, of course, I love the challenge of a really delicious drama. And, of course, so many great dramas have lots of comedy to them. I always say, Breaking Bad is basically a comedy. It's kind of as funny as I need a comedy to be. That's a pretty comical premise. A science teacher starts cooking up drugs and in an odd couple relationship with a former student of his. It's pretty funny. So, and he, that actor, Bryan Cranston, brings a lot of hilarious comedy to that part, I think. So, I think that the lines are often blurred between comedy and drama, and I'd love to try a funny drama.
In Drunk History, you were?
Oh, yes. I got to play Teddy Roosevelt.
That's
in Drunk
History. Teddy Roosevelt. You did a great job, Teddy Roosevelt. How hard is that to do? Now, you get to be the character, but you are speaking, or someone else is speaking, a drunk person is speaking your lines for you. Is that difficult?
It's incredibly hard to do. The way they do it, actually, is that they take the audio from the drunk person and they pipe it over speakers, and your job is to lip sync it as well as you can in front of the cameras. But here's the incredible challenge of it. Drunk people, when they're talking, put weird pauses in their sentences. You know, slightly longer pauses than sober people do, and pauses of unpredictable length in between their words. I found it very challenging.
Yeah, yeah. What was the scene? I don't remember the scene with Roosevelt. What do they have you doing?
Well, the hardest scene for me was one where Roosevelt is I guess he led an attack on Cuba. And it was a poorly thought out thing where it was the beginning of the Rough Riders, and they weren't able to get all their horses on the boat and all this stuff, and it was a very slapdash attack.
But
they were outnumbered and everything. But Roosevelt gives a rousing speech saying, "We're going over that hill. I'm going over that hill, and I want you to come with me," and all this. And so I had to deliver that, but this was the only time in the history of Drunk History, which is a very low-budget show, that they actually got a real horse. They had, over the course of their first season, they had it in the budget to do one day with an actual horse, and they thought that this was the day to do it. Other days they have, you know, fake horses and things like that. So I had to deliver this rousing speech, lip-syncing to a drunk person's rendition of it, on horseback. And With a fake mustache that was in constant danger of falling off my face.
Yeah. I'm thinking Emmy quality.
Absolutely, yes. Another snub.
Yeah. That show should get Emmys, I think. That's the most brilliant, innovative. I mean, it's great. It sounds terrible. When I first heard about it, I thought drunk people, you know, doing history.
Yeah.
It's like the worst. But it's like the best idea it turned out, you know. Because you actually do learn.
That's right. Why it's so great is that they hire an actual historical consultant to make sure that the facts are correct, and the drunk person is fully briefed on the actual history of the things that they're going to discuss prior to getting drunk. That, I think, is the key.
Yeah.
First they learn it, then they get drunk, and then they explain it.
Is Review still in production for this season? Or you've done all shows for this season?
We are putting the final dots on the I's and crosses on the T's of post-production. There's a few, believe it or not, some visual effects that need to be ironed out. But the first episode is ready to air, thank goodness, because it's less than a week away.
Yeah, well, fantastic. And congratulations on your success with this and all things to come.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure talking with you. Andy Daly, ladies and gentlemen, in Los Angeles.
Thanks,
you can see him in Review on Comedy Central.